We are the rising sun. We are the change. We are the ones we've been waiting for, and we are dawning. We are living through a very stressful time, and many people are understandably scared, angry, and despairing. From my perspective, however, we are living in exciting and historic times. We are witnessing the beginnings of a fundamental shift in human perception, a collective evolutionary leap to a higher level of consciousness. While the leap itself is positive and exciting, the process of breakdown leading up to the leap is chaotic and highly stressful. Our old destructive ways of being in the world and interacting with one another and the earth have brought us to the place where we must evolve or perish. Trans folks are experts at transformation, and so we have much to teach others about surrendering to the scary and exciting process of change. Because change is scary. It truly is a death, the end of the world as we know it. And most of us would rather live in a familiar malaise than step into the unpredictability of change. Why we so often stay in jobs and relationships that we have long outgrown. Although we may say that we want better, change requires letting go of what is known and stepping into the void before we have concrete evidence of what's next. And this is terrifying to most people. For those of you who have seen Moana, trans folks, I believe, are explorers, the ones who have the courage to go out beyond the surf to see what's out there. And like any hero's journey, the purpose of the journey is to bring the gifts back to your community, to share what you have learned and to teach others who won't be making the journey themselves. Sharing what you have seen and what you know from your explorations can fundamentally transform the understanding of the world for everyone. One of the manifestations of this collective evolution is that we have outgrown binary gender, and youth are defecting from the gender binary in droves. The future is non-binary, and so in many ways, we are the future, embodying already some of the aspects of the new paradigm. In addition, there are things that we know due to our unique journeys that when shared can help others. These factors make us natural leaders and teachers. For instance, trans and genderqueer and non-binary people well understand that things are not always as they appear, and so don't be misled by surface appearances. When people encounter me on the street, they would never imagine that I was born female. Although we have been taught that societal change happens slowly in a linear step-by-step process, this is not necessarily the case. Often there are no signs of impending change, or things look like they are actually headed in the opposite direction. I witnessed this in South Africa at the official ending of apartheid. While activists had been working behind the scenes for decades to bring about societal transformation, on the surface, in the years and months leading up to it, there were no signs that apartheid was just about to end. In fact, the apartheid state ramped up some of its most brutal measures and seemed extraordinarily entrenched. Until one day, like that, it was over. We can look back and see that such brutal measures were actually signs of vulnerability, the last gasp of the apartheid state to try to hold on to power and stave off necessary change. Many have described the fall of the Soviet Union in similar terms. No matter how deeply entrenched they appear to be, these rigid structures disintegrated from within, to the surprise of many of those watching. I believe the United States is in one of those times right now. So it may feel like we are going in the exact opposite direction of where we want to end up. But that's the nature of the paradigm shift, that sometimes the quickest route to our destination can be what appears to be heading in the opposite direction. What else do we know? We know that binaries don't represent reality. Dualistic thinking is one of the core aspects of Western culture, but this way of thinking is a mental construction only, rooted in our desire for order and hierarchy, with the white obsession with categorization and ranking that was such an aspect of colonization, and it does not adequately represent reality and is actually quite dangerous. So you can think of the us-them binary that is so fundamental to nationalism and to gender as an example. It is created by falsely homogenizing the us, or men, falsely homogenizing the them, or women, and then exaggerating and essentializing the differences between the us and the them, or men and women. The extremes are highlighted, the middle is erased, and we call it a binary. And so binaries are simply not true, first of all. And this is not just the case with regards to our gendered personalities, but also our bodies. Did you know, for instance, that 1 in 1,500 babies is born with bodies not easily classifiable as male or female? Such biological complexity is actually quite common, about as common as having red hair. Yet most people have never heard of intersex. According to Brown University, the total number of people whose bodies differ from standard male or female is 1 in 100 births, and that is extraordinary. There is no science that supports the belief that humans come in two and only two categories. This imposition is not only inaccurate, but it actually shapes what we are able to see. According to sociologists Suzanne Kessler and Wendy McKenna, the reason we have a gender binary is because we believe there's a gender binary, which causes us to perceive a gender binary. This explains why the 1 in 1,500 babies born intersex are subjected to traumatic surgeries to make them conform to the binary, rather than be seen as evidence that our binary construction is inadequate. Third, binaries encourage polarization and antagonism, and so we are currently desperately needing a non-binary approach. Our training to view life in terms of oppositional pairs has serious implications beyond gender, as we can see with our current political polarization. The very construct of rigid dichotomies encourages antagonism. Linguistics professor Deborah Tannen reports, for instance, that when students are asked to compare two cultures, they are inclined to polarize them, and so she has them compare three instead. When we believe that issues have two sides rather than unlimited perspectives, it creates an adversarial environment which actually undermines our pursuit of truth and is damaging to the human spirit. Finally, binary gender is not a path of wholeness. When we construct gender as a binary, we are then only able to cultivate and express at best half our human potential. We are then taught to find our, quote, other half so that together we can be whole. And why would we do that? When we are born, doctors make a cursory inspection of our genitals and then non-consensually assign us a sex, male or female, and this classification largely determines our entire life trajectory, dictating everything from how people interact with us to what clothing we are expected to wear and how we should style our hair, what hobbies and interests we are expected to have, the majors and careers that we are encouraged to choose, the music and movies we are believed to like, and the power our voices have in society, just as a start. Those signified as male are expected to present and behave in ways considered to be masculine. Individuals designated as female are expected to present and behave in ways considered to be feminine. And there are rewards for following these rules of gender and punishment for those who violate them, which continually work to shape who we are and how we express ourselves, whether we are consciously aware of it or not. And such expectations are limiting to everyone, not just to those who violate them. So creating more spaciousness and less punishment around gender would benefit everyone, regardless of where they are located on the gender spectrum. And Gen Z, pronounced the queerest generation ever, knows this. 25% of Gen Z uses they/them pronouns for themselves, and 25% of Gen Z expects to change their gender identity at least once in their lifetime. So many indigenous societies on this continent regarded gender-expansive people as counselors, teachers, healers, and peacemakers due to the specialized knowledge they had as a result of their unique life journeys, their own integration of the masculine and the feminine polarities, and their ability to hold space for the entire community, since they were not loyal to any particular gender camp and had lived experience on both sides of the gender divide. They were given a place in society and the opportunity to make important contributions. But in U.S. settler society, we are reviled, not revered. We are shut out of society, denied belonging in the human community, and opportunities to make a contribution and care for our own well-being are withheld. One of the core wounds of being non-binary and transgender is the existential erasure of being told every day in your every interaction with society that you simply don't exist. There's not a place for you in the human community. Public facilities are divided into men and women. Practically every consumer good is targeted pink or blue, and it makes navigating everyday life extremely stressful and complicated. The unemployment rate in trans communities is a staggering 70%, especially given the ways that the work world is literally separated into pink and blue collar. Many trans people are simply unemployable. Trans people are 4 times more likely to live in households with an annual income of under $10,000. And we are demonized as sexual predators and continually treated like a threat, even as we are being attacked. And as black men know all too well, being regarded as dangerous by society is actually very dangerous to you. About 36 trans people are murdered in the US every year. That's about 3 a month, mostly trans women of color. So precarity is the best word to describe the status of trans, genderqueer, and non-binary people in the contemporary US. Precarity is defined as the state of being precarious or uncertain, a state of persistent insecurity with regard to employment or income, a precarious existence lacking in predictability, job security, material or psychological welfare. Personally speaking, the language of transgender wasn't even invented until I was post-college, so my former self wandered alone in the wilderness for decades without any tools or reference points. When your society fails you by not giving you the tools that you need to understand yourself and to communicate about your experience, it is referred to as hermeneutical injustice. When you are denied belonging in your society, when you are viewed as unintelligible by those around you, and when you are unable to make a sustainable life as a result, it creates a lot of trauma. So here are some of the specific challenges and wounds of gender-expansive people in their own words. Trauma and rejection. Imagine everyone you encounter all day long telling you that you are not real and that there is something fundamentally wrong with you. Being constantly validated takes a toll. Shame. We are both too much and not enough. We are always made out to be the problem. Loneliness and isolation. I didn't even learn that non-binary people exist until college. Embodiment. My body was where the shame lived, and so I retreated into my mind. Self-care. I always put other people's needs ahead of my own. I learned early on that other people's comfort is more important than my well-being. And we see this clearly in the trans bathroom debates, where the comfort of cisgender people is prioritized over the safety and basic needs of gender nonconforming people. Dysphoria. Gender dysphoria feels like when you know to your core that something is true and everything else around you, including what people say and do and the feedback you get from the world, says otherwise. Safety. I don't feel safe leaving the house. And this is especially true for those who are assigned male at birth. Voice and being heard and being defined from the outside. A lot of airtime is given to other people's views of us rather than our own experience. Our existence is made into a matter of opinion, as if our genders are debatable and not just who we are. In other words, there's been a lot of talk about us, but very little engagement with us. So previously it was doctors, and now it's the media and politicians. Hiding and being seen. I wasn't really sure what I was, but I knew that I didn't want to be hated. I tried my best to fit in and not draw attention to myself. And finally, belonging. I felt like my parents would stop loving me if they knew that I was different. Doing the deep inner work required to heal from this trauma also creates strengths and gifts. And so here are the special gifts, skills, and knowledge of gender-expansive people. Courage, how it feels to lose everything to be who you are. Resilience, our choir is named Phoenix, and so there's a lot of rising from the ashes. We are role models of authenticity. You know, people oftentimes feel like The journeys of transgender people are quite different from the journeys of other people, but it is just because our journey to authenticity happens through the body, and so it is more visible and is more public, but it is fundamentally the same journey. We're all on journeys of growing into greater authenticity. Wholeness from the balance and integration of the masculine and feminine. Flexibility, creativity, and resourcefulness, usually from not having what we need, and so needing to be able to make do with what we have. Self-fashioning and reinvention, willingness and boldness. Vision. Most people take the given world to be reality, but trans people take the given world as merely a starting place. If I took what was on my birth certificate to be reality for me, I would be living a very different life. And so how can we apply this perspective to our collective experience as well and go beyond what most people think is possible? And finally, we are transformation specialists. So Phoenix incorporates both the special wounds and the special gifts of trans and genderqueer and non-binary people. We were started in trauma, in the experience of total erasure that I had at an LGBTQ choral festival in 2012. I vowed that it would not happen again, even if I had to start my own chorus. And so I created Phoenix because it needed to exist, not because I had the time or resources or expertise to lead it. Our rehearsal structure is designed to meet potentially unmet needs. So we begin with an introduction question to create a sense of belonging, and everyone adding their voice to the circle. We always have snacks and taking care of people's physical needs. We do a breathing practice to create inner safety to allow us to become more present. We do stretching and practicing being embodied together, which is always a challenge. And singing, creating together, finding our place in the community. Then we have a tradition to close our rehearsal if we have someone new or someone who is leaving or someone who is having an especially hard time. We put them in the center of the circle and create a sound mosaic using their name. You know, names are of such significance in trans communities, and so it is a way of honoring their personhood. Phoenix is not just a traditional choir made up of trans people. Everything about how Phoenix is run flows from who we are as trans and genderqueer and non-binary folks. Phoenix is governed by what I call trans sensibilities. Because being trans, for me at least, is not just about gender. It's a whole different way of doing life. And so here's what I mean by trans sensibilities. Innovation. We believe trans people are born to be innovators, and so we feel empowered to redefine for ourselves what a choir is and how an organization is run. We also write a lot of our own music. In our 7 years together, we have written 8 original pieces plus 2 stories for kids. Multiplicity. Collaboration is the bedrock of everything that we do. Collaboration with one another, with other organizations, and as you have seen, even with our audiences. I included a photo here of our shirts. While they visibly identify us as a choir, you can see that each person's is self-designed and unique. Self-direction. Being led from within is really important to trans people. How most trans people have survived is by fiercely hanging on to an inner sense of self despite lack of recognition in the world around them. And I was reminded of how important this is when I organized a harmony workshop for Phoenix. So since we do so much of our own arrangements, I thought it would be helpful to have a harmony expert come in and teach us how to think about harmonizing. And at the time, we were working on a song from a recording, and so the person leading the workshop went through and notated all of the harmonies from the recording for us, which I thought was hugely helpful. But our members took offense, feeling like she was saying that these are the harmonies, and so they are more legitimate and more important than the harmonies that I hear inside. And so it was a good reminder to me of how important that listening from within is to gender expansive people. And finally, fluidity. In Phoenix, then, we don't have gendered voice parts. People sing whatever part is most comfortable for their voice. And this changes from week to week and from song to song. And so there's a considerable amount of movement between parts. As a group, we work with what we have in the room. And so our pieces are living and not static. And because our performance goals are also fluid, then it creates a safe space for trying new things. So Phoenix is more of an experimental laboratory for self-growth than a traditional choir. And being outside our comfort zone together is very bonding. And so to close, as we contemplate the future of gender, I just wanted to share a list generated by members of Phoenix that I thought you might enjoy and you might want to bring back to your book group.